This is Wells Tech, a show that explores the intersection of technology and ministry. Wells Tech is a part of the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Hi, and welcome to Wells Tech. This is episode 460, recorded on August 30th, 2016. Due to some technical difficulties, we will join the show already in progress. Speaking of summer and the end of summer, we're actually ending a summer-long series. Each summer we try and find some topics that are a little bit lighter, kind of self-contained, and this summer we took a month on three different topics, and we're in the month of August, the last show of August, and we are focusing on self-publishing. Over the course of the past year, we wrote a book. In fact, got mine right here, came Amazon, sent me a copy. I just had to give them a little money. We wrote a book called With All Your Heart, a book about project management for churches, Christian schools, and other faith-based organizations. And so earlier in the month, we were kind of ramping up our Microsoft Word skills and our editorial skills, and we pushed this through something called CreateSpace, which is an Amazon property, and out pops a book. I wish it were quite that easy, but it's not. But the satisfaction of getting a physical book, I wasn't expecting to be as excited about a physical book as I was about this one, Sally.
Yeah, it's really nice to hold it in your hands and see all that work that you've put into it actually turn out to look fairly decent. I'm pretty proud of the way that the final product looks, and the quality of the print, it's amazing. Last week when we talked, it was just a digital resource out on the web, and within a week we're holding a hard copy of a print book, and that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, one of the things that surprised me was how long it was. I didn't think we had that much to say, but that turned out to be, 150
or so?
100, the actual last numbered page is 146. So, mm-hmm. So that's what we did earlier in the month. Last week, if you joined us, we were kind of continuing down that path and talking about how to get it up on Kindle, so get a digital copy out there, which is a cheaper process, but on the purchase side, I wouldn't say it was any less difficult to actually to get it up there because you're using other tools and there's all kinds of formatting issues and such. But that's available out there now as well. So as we were looking through the book, now our next step is to actually correct all the typos and, you know, everything else that maybe we didn't have time to tweak over the course of writing the book because we were under the gun and deadlines and whatever. So there's some things we want to change. The good news is when you self-publish and you do on demand, you can just upload a new copy and that's it. There's no inventory that you got to throw out or discount. It's all just up there. So if you guys are interested in the book itself, whether that be in Kindle format or in a good old-fashioned paper format, we'll put a link to the book in the show notes. But if you go to Amazon and search for With All Your Heart, there'll be a bunch of titles with that name. So you just type in one of our names and it should come up to the top too. So, or With All Your Heart, I think I found it, With All Your Heart Project Management. It finds its way to the top, so. We're excited about it, and not going to make any money off of it, but it was a labor of love regardless. So what are we going to talk about today, Sally, that we got this one last day of digital or self-publishing?
Well, not to make this series any simpler, we are going to dive into how we could actually get an audio version of the book out there for sale, also on the Amazon page and in Audible. And it comes along with its very own sets of specifications and equipment and software requirements as well. So not a simple task, it seems.
Right. This is through another subsidiary, I'm thinking. I didn't read about, you know, kind of the history of this application, but it's called ACX at acx.com. So that's where they direct you. Since Audible is owned by Amazon. All these kind of things come together and they point you in the right direction for their for your submission. However, ACX, I think, puts it more, does not only put it on Audible, there are other properties that it puts it on. One of them, I believe, is iTunes. I can't find it here. I'm just looking on the page right now. There are three places that it'll appear for you. Maybe it's Google, Amazon, and iTunes are the three places that you can put it on. But anyway, so you just have to, you just have to record the audio. And there are a couple things that you can do there too. You can have somebody else record it. You have to pay for that, of course, or you can record it yourself, which is the route that we took. However, there are some very specific guidelines for how to do that, beginning with a whole set of rules and regs for the technical side, as well as some help content for what kind of maybe environment you should think about recording it. So it's not as simple as just throwing on a headset, you know, USB headset and talking. There are all kinds of things that you have to abide by. And one of the ones that I found most challenging was the setting. So they tell us to record in a fashion where the quietest piece of the audio is not any higher than a threshold of negative 60 decibels, so minus 60 dB. And that actually is pretty quiet, I found. So using a tool like Adobe Audition, or you can use Audacity or GarageBand, it'll tell you what your, how loud or soft it is at the quietest point. And I found just doing this in my office, it was higher, a lot higher than minus 60 decibels. So, and that was mostly, I think, because of ventilation. Most office buildings have, you know, kind of a constant flow, you know, from the ceiling or wherever. If you're home, you know, your HVAC kicks in, whether that's cooling or heating, that's going to be a challenge. So you have to find a place that doesn't have that, as well as something that doesn't have a lot of echo too. So you're not fighting with, you know, the reverb that goes on in a house, maybe with wood floors. So what I did is I found a carpeted space in my house, brought the equipment there, and then did a test recording and found that I could get underneath that 60 decibels if there weren't planes flying overhead or lawnmowers outside. So there was a lot of stopping and starting and trying to, you know, get the hang of it. And I did the first chapter and took probably a good 2.5 hours to get through that process for about 30 minutes of actual talking time.
Okay. I did a little testing as well, but I very quickly realized that my cuckoo clock might be yes, detrimental to the process. So we'll have to find somewhere. I talked to my husband a little and he talked about padded rooms. So I'm not quite sure what's in my future in order to, yes, to accomplish that. Maybe I'll just
usually
let you
not have a good conversation when your husband's talking about padded,
yeah,
rooms.
Yeah. We talk about that all the time. What do you mean? No, I'm kidding.
But that's really what it takes. I mean, you got to find a spot. I think I'm going to go into the basement this mm-hmm. week and finish this if I can, because there's no windows or very few windows down there. I can shut things down, and mostly it's carpeted, so I'll give that a shot. There are other requirements. You can't have anything higher than 3 decibels or minus 3 dB for, you know, the highest or the loudest part of the recording. You have to record in 192 kilobits per second. It's to be an MP3 file, a constant bit rate, blah, blah, blah. All the directions are provided there. I did want to share some of the tools that you might want to consider if you're interested in doing this. There are a lot of different options out there for what you can do with audio recording equipment. And a couple of things that I'm using, and one, I have access to some pretty good equipment because we have a recording studio here at the Synod office. And one of them is this Heil PR40 recording microphone, and it's made for the spoken word as opposed to picking up singing or those kinds of things. And it's rather expensive, but it's really good. Amazon selling it for $327. If you don't want to go that high, and if you're not going to do a lot of this, maybe my second choice would be something from Audio-Technica, the AT2020. That's a much more reasonable $87. I've even got that here in my office. I'll show that in just a minute. And then the other thing that you're going to need, because I'm not quite sure regular old USB mics are going to be sensitive enough or have enough quality to get what Audible wants, is a product, and the one that I'm using here is from Steinberg, a UR22. It is a kind of a microphone preamp. So there's a USB connection from it that goes to your computer, and then you have what are called XLR jacks on the front, which fit your regular microphone. Now, some churches, I would think, might have some of this kind of equipment. The challenge would just be getting into a place where you're going to have total silence and not have the echo or the reverb. This Steinberg is not overly expensive either. It's really rugged and does a nice job. I've used it from time to time for the podcast. So it's not a quick setup. Here's that microphone I was talking about. It's actually very heavy. Usually the heavier the microphone, the better the quality. So you just need an XLR cable and an audio converter that goes into your computer. So you're going to need some more equipment than maybe what you would normally use for a regular video conference, something like that. So just factor that in if you think you're going to do it yourself. I don't remember, Sally, do you, what the price was if you wanted to have somebody else do it? I thought it was there someplace, but I don't have it in front of me. But there, it wasn't as expensive as I thought it would be, but it probably goes on length with the book.
If memory serves, I believe you kind of put it out to bid, and you can choose. I want to say that when we talked to Pastor Gunther about it, he said he had paid someone $50 to record his book. But they do have a couple of different pricing models. You can pay up front, or you can agree to a percentage of the sales. Mm-hmm. And I guess you could do a combination as well. You could have give them some royalties basically off the sales of the audio. So it gets a lot more complex, but you would have vocal talent that would be worrying about all those decibel levels for you.
Right. Yeah. They have the studios and all that other stuff. Then you don't have to worry about that. But there is something nice about narrating your own content. You're the one that knows it the best. Mm-hmm. So you know where to, kind of how to read it and where you want to put the emphasis and how it flows. But I found even reading my own stuff or our own stuff that I had to remember the flow of it or why I wrote it like this. And I think that going through an editorial process even before you read it, because reading, is different than speaking as well. So there's some nuances there you got to figure out as well.
Mm-hmm, definitely. So, is it really worth it? I think more and more people are buying audio content. I had someone email me today looking for 30-minute devotional series for folks to listen to in the car. Beyond Bible reading or just the daily devotion that takes 5 or 10 minutes to listen to, they're looking for longer devotional material, but they want it in audio format. So right. I think there is, a need for this. It's certainly a mode that the Lord has made available to us that we can, share the good news. So,
and I think that given that a lot of what a church or school would produce could be devotional in nature. Now, ours has some biblical content in it, of course, but it's mostly educational or instructional, mm-hmm. Which is a little bit different read than maybe reading something like what Pastor Gunther put online, a series of sermons or devotions. So I think there's a lot of stuff out there that maybe already exists. You just have to kind of think what might resonate and what would be useful, and then go through the process. Again, there's no charge, there's no cost to doing this except time And again, if you don't have the equipment, you may have to do a little bit of investing to do that. But I think anybody who's trying hard enough could figure out how to get this done. So
got to try hard, huh? That's the secret.
Don't give up.
I mean, all right.
It'll take some time, but I think it might be worth it. So we'll see what happens. But so we'll continue the process, and we'll kind of give you an update as we progress through this, this audible portion of the project. But we're not going to devote a whole show to it anymore. We're kind of hitting the home stretch.
Yep. Take us some time, and we'll let you know when it's available.
So, very good. Let's move along to one of our favorite segments of the show, and that's our picks of the week. Sally, it looks like you have one of your favorite products as a pick.
I do, and I have probably full disclosure, I've probably made this a pick in the past, but today, near and dear to my heart.
So I give you a pass, yes.
Good enough. It's a product for my friends at TechSmith. TechSmith is a software development company that is in the Michigan area. I can't remember what city exactly, but Michigan company, and they do great stuff with screen recording and screen capture. And I've talked often about their tool Snagit, but today my pick is actually going to be their video tool. It's a robust video editor and screen recorder called Camtasia, and they have versions for PC and for Mac. I have used it a couple of times just in the last week or so, and so that's what kind of brought it to the forefront in my mind. And I'll tell you right away that you can get a free trial of Camtasia if you want to try it out, or if you have a little video project you want to accomplish, and you can do it in the free trial time period. I know it used to be 30 days, but I think maybe they've slimmed it down a little. Nope, it's still a 30-day free trial, and it's a fully functional version if you go through the process of signing up for their free trial. You could crank out some video projects in the process. But pricing-wise, it's normally priced at $300, and there is nonprofit/government pricing for $249 and education pricing for $179. So that's quite a bargain. And I'll just mention this as well, because I know there are some that listen that are also Google certified educators like me. And actually, TechSmith gives you a free copy of Snagit and Camtasia if you're a Google certified trainer. So can't beat that price if you happen to be a Google certified trainer. Anyway, I like a lot of things about Camtasia. It allows me the flexibility because it has lots of different options and things. It does allow for unlimited tracks. And what I've found is that's really, really helpful when I'm trying to create video that has a specific script to it. So oftentimes my workflow will be that I'll just talk my way through and record my screen as I'm talking through a process. And then when I bring it into Camtasia, I actually split off the audio and video into different tracks, which is a really nice feature. And then I'm able to actually transcribe. I type out my script from this run-through discussion of the process. So it's not going to catch all my ums and things if I get rid of that audio and record it nicely as standalone audio to go with the video that I recorded it. And so Camtasia gives you all that kind of flexibility. It allows you to bring in still images. It allows you to narrate PowerPoints. Bring in your different audio files besides the ones that you record in the system. And it allows you to record your webcam. As a matter of fact, I had a question last week from somebody using Final Web, and they wanted to be able to do anchor tags. And so I just turned on my Camtasia and made a quick recording for them. And if you're watching my screen, you can see I'm down here in the lower right corner, actually, with my webcam on, as I'm explaining the process to them. And I think you can control the size of your webcam. So if you want to have that, you know, teacher on the screen kind of effect, you can turn on your webcam in the process. One more thing that I use quite often is it allows you to do pans and zooms. And this one is literally hot off the press. If you're watching my screen, you can see me pan out on the brand new school statistics form. We are just unveiling this video actually tomorrow as we prepare to roll out the school statistics form. And if you weren't watching, I started up in a corner of it and panned out to show the entire form. And so I record the video and then I add those effects on top of it. Allows me to do things like fading through black to different segments of the video and things like that. So lots and lots of options there. It's a lot of fun to work with, and it gives you a lot of different output formats as well. Very easy to output even in high def for uploading to YouTube or Vimeo or wherever you want to use to share the videos you create with Camtasia. So highly recommend. I've used it for years. Literally, I've had Camtasia probably at least maybe 10 years. And I can tell you that I've found it to be super stable. I can't think of times, knock on wood, that it's ever crashed on me. And I find it a pleasant experience, intuitive. Of course, they have lots of great video tutorials that they created with Camtasia to walk you through the process. So if you're looking to do video, and that's a very popular thing for a lot of different reasons these days, I would highly recommend investigating Camtasia from TechSmith.
Okemos, Michigan.
There you go. That's the place.
A little bit east of Lansing. I had to look it up. So
okay. Good deal.
So I was interested when you were talking about recording the script or doing the audio recording after the video. Is that the way you normally do it? Do you do the video and then you voice over?
I do, and then I actually clip my videos to line up with the clean audio that I record, mm-hmm. and that's a technique I've read a lot of, you know, professionals use for their tutorial videos. It's just a lot cleaner to do it that way. I have a really hard time doing things off the cuff and not, you know, having a professional sounding audio.
That would drive me nuts. I got to do it all together.
Okay, there you go. We're different.
Do it either way. Yeah. This isn't my pick, but one tool that I ran across for my MLC class that I taught over the summer, because I asked them to submit a screencast because it's on presentations, so that's the final project, is something called Screencast-O-Matic. Mm-hmm. And the website, I think, does it have dashes in it? Yeah, screencast-o-matic.com. It is free, but you have some limitations. But I was really surprised at the quality that it provides, because there's a little download and you can actually record not just your web screen, but you can record your desktop as well. And then you do have some options to put your image, your webcam image, on the screen as well. So if you want to try that out too, and it's not kind of a anti-pick, but I found it to be pretty good for things like that. I think you have a time limit on it as well. Something like Jing, or Jing is 5 minutes, isn't it? And then their Snagit does the same thing, mm-hmm. and that is 15 minutes, I believe. And then Camtasia, which is the top product, is as much hard disk space as you have. So
yes.
So my pick is not screencasting. It is actually an old standby, and that is Google Drive. A lot of schools I know that maybe administrators that are listening know all about Google Drive, because that's the main storage device for Google Apps accounts. But I was kind of forced to make a decision this weekend and to determine which horse I wanted to ride. It was one of those weekends where I had to do a lot of collaborating with different people. I'm on the technology committee at church. I collaborate with you. There's other people that I share stuff with, family members, whatever. And I was finding that I had stuff in every conceivable cloud syncing solution or cloud storage solution. So I had stuff in Dropbox, and I had stuff in OneDrive, and I had stuff in Box, and I had stuff in Google Drive. So I said, enough is enough. I need to pick one. Now, I can't get away from OneDrive because that's what we use in the office, but I can easily separate office and personal stuff. So I did a little bit of a comparison. I thought I'd share that with you all. The one that I settled on was Google Drive, and I settled on it for a couple reasons. It's stability. It's really rock solid. The upload and download speeds are very good. And the second reason was it's got the cheapest storage model. So I pay $2 a month for 100 gigabytes of storage. And with each subsequent, you know, I can bump that up and go to 200 and so on and so forth. If you have a lot of stuff, a ton of stuff, it's 10 bucks a month for a terabyte of storage. But I find 100 gigabytes is fine for me. I did compare that to OneDrive because I was kind of leaning toward OneDrive because I use it, obviously, in the office. And it isn't quite as appealing. It's $1.99 per month for 50 gigabytes. Now, the one caveat here is if you are an Office 365 user, the best deal, even better than Google Drive, is you pay for their Office 365 personal or Office 365 home subscription. The personal is $7 or $70 a year, so you get a little bit of a discount there. And you get a whole terabyte that comes with the deal, plus you get to install Office 365 on one computer. So you get Word, Outlook, Excel, PowerPoint, Access, Publisher, that kind of stuff. The best deal is the Office 365 home subscription, which gives you up to 5 users who can install this. So spouse, kids, you know, it's back to school time. Maybe this would be something that would be appealing. And that's $100 a year. And then each user gets 1 terabyte of storage. So each user gets to install Office, a local copy of Office, and a terabyte of storage, as long as you keep up your subscription. And $100 a year for all that actually is a very, very good deal. Definitely the way to go if you're an Office user. So that was what was tempting to me, but I have an Office subscription. In fact, the subscription we have through the Synod is one of these subscriptions where you can install it 5 times. So work, home, whatever. So that's kind of a good deal. So I didn't really need that package. So the Google Drive solution was a little bit cheaper for me. The other one I looked at was Dropbox, and they are the highest at $8.25 per month per terabyte. Actually, they're not the highest. So Google, let me see, what was Google again? Google was $9.99 a month per terabyte. So Dropbox was a little cheaper than Google Drive, but I don't know that I ever use a terabyte of storage. So Google Drive was the winner. I think that that's what I'm going to try and stick with.
Okay. Couple of things.
You probably use all those too, Sally.
I'm all over the place. Yep. But a couple of things, just looking at your screen while you had that Google Drive up, they were advertising Google Photos, and anything you store in Google Photos doesn't count toward your storage limit on Drive. If you were to upload photos to Drive, those would count. But if you add them through Google Photos, they don't. So that helps. Then you kind of, basically if you store them at a reasonable quality.
They say high quality uploads.
Right.
Stored for free, but original quality uploads will consume your Drive storage. So
like raw
they
format.
Get to pick what they down-res it to. Mm-hmm. I found it to be okay, but since I take pictures with a DSLR and it produces raw files, mm-hmm. raw files are those, you know, ones that they don't upload for free.
Right.
So
those would
count. So
it's
not a good backup solution for that. So
that's true. The other thing to mention, and I'm sure you know this, Martin, is that Google Apps for Education schools have unlimited Drive storage for free.
Yep.
And so all you folks that have an MLC email address, you also have unlimited Drive storage associated with that yep. MLC account, for instance, and of course anywhere at our schools as well. The challenge there then becomes, do I put my personal files on a school account
own space, right?
Mm-hmm. And you know what happens when I leave that school or lose that account or access or whatever. Right. So lots of things to consider, but worth taking time for sure, like you did, to come up with the best
solution. App, just to follow on to that, the administrator of your Google Apps account can at any time transfer ownership of any content that you have there. That's kind of how they work around the, you know, employees coming in and out. So mm-hmm. let's say you're the administrator and I'm the teacher, and I take a call and go someplace else. what you would do as the administrator is give my account, basically my content, ownership to whoever's coming in to replace me as seventh grade teacher or whatever. So you have to keep that in mind. Now you can obviously get the stuff off, and it does, part of the neat part about Google Drive is you can sync stuff. So you don't necessarily want to sync everything all the time. So you just have to kind of manage that process. All right. Sally, should we move on to community feedback?
I think that would be a wise decision. Although you mentioned earlier about following up in the future. You were talking about following up on the audiobook, and I thought in the community, in our picks of the week, would be a good time for me to ask you to follow up on your step bet. How's that going for you?
It was over. I mean, I made it through my 6 weeks.
Good for you.
Let me just pull it up here. I don't think they give the totals here, but basically just people who haven't maybe been following along with my Step Quest. StepBet is an app for Android or iOS. You connect it to your step counter. You join a game, they call it, and these games vary in length and activity. But the game that I joined had about 750 other users. And it goes for 6 weeks, and you have step goals. So in my particular 6 week period, I had 3 active days I needed to make and 2 stretch days. So I had 2 days off each week. And through that process, I had to walk 11,800 steps on my active days and 14,800 steps, or 14,200 steps, I think, on my stretch days, which was not insignificant. That's
no, it isn't.
I'm on a treadmill sometimes.
A lot of time.
But anyway, I made it. Debbie made it too. She was doing it with me.
Good for her.
And everybody puts in $40. So you have to give them your credit card, and they charge your $40. And the enticement is, well, you get your $40 back if you win. So if you make your goals, plus a cut of everybody that had to drop out that didn't make it. So I don't know what the total people who made. I think it was, of the 750 who started, it was in the low 500s when we finished. So about 250 people dropped out. What that translated into was $9.34 coming back to me. So I have $49.34 sitting in my account. I can just keep it in there and then do another one. Or I can request a payout, and I haven't done that yet, so I'm not sure actually how they pay it out, but I'm assuming a credit back to your charge card or whatever. So I made $9.34. I don't know what that works out to per step, but because that was a lot of steps. In fact, I don't remember what it was, but it was a lot. So
I took your $9.34 for 6 weeks work with a $40 investment, and I annualized that. If you turn it into that same $40 being reinvested and making just your $9.34, which you could make more, you never know, you'd make $80.95 in 1 year's period. So that's a pretty good return on investment. That's like a...
That would pay for a new pair of tennis walking shoes.
Absolutely. So, and you'd be healthy in the process. So
and
sounds like a
pair
good
of socks.
Deal.
Yeah.
Thanks for letting us follow along.
No problem. I enjoyed it. I think I'm taking a week off, and then we'll see. Because it gets a little harder in winter up here in the northern part. So even though I do have a treadmill in the basement. Debbie teaches during the day, so she actually gets close to her goal just walking around the classroom.
Sure.
I sit in a chair all day. So it's a little bit more challenging.
Yeah, somebody asked me today, do they ever let you off for good behavior? I'm like, no, there are chains on my ankles, and I'm tied to this desk.
She's monitored, yes. All right, now
we can move on. Sure. We heard from our friend Pastor Rob Gunther, who's a Wells Tech Hall of Famer serving up there at Grace in Kenai, Alaska. And Pastor Gunther, we've mentioned several times throughout this summer series, Martin, as being somewhat of our inspiration to try the publishing thing, because he's done it with a sermon series and with other books. And he wrote to us in response to our show last week. I don't know if you'd want to read through some of what he wrote there, or want me to?
Let me bring it up here. You caught me off guard. He said, I've been busy, as summer is in Alaska, but I've been catching up on some Wells Tech episodes. Just want to say congrats on your new book. Very exciting. We'd have to say you were the inspiration for that. So
yep.
So your fault. Our encouragement, one encouragement I have for your listeners is to use pre-existing materials. You don't actually have to write a book like I did, just use stuff you already have, sermons, conference paper, a lesson plan, or a Bible study already prepared. Especially if you just go Kindle, you can not only make some passive, calls it passive income, very modest passive income, but still. But more importantly, you can get the word out. I'm certain more people are searching for Bible studies on Amazon than are visiting the WLS essay file. Probably true. Mm-hmm. Why not put a bunch of those essays together as a circuit or a district? Good idea. Put them in a book and put it on Amazon with CreateSpace. It would get a bigger audience instantly, and you'd have a few dollars to put in the mission offering each month. I now get about $10 per month from In Their Sandals, which was a devotional series that he published. Nothing to write home about, but I think 2,000 plus copies distributed means 2,000 plus people are potentially reading 12 sermons. Now that can make an impact for the kingdom. Anyway, here's an example of something I did for the District Mission Board. It's already pretty dated, needs a second edition. It's a Webcasting 101 Kindle book. I only did it as Kindle, priced it at 99 cents, but dozens of copies have been distributed over the years. I'm thinking of putting some of my Bible studies out there. I bought Kindle books for 99 cents just to get themes and an outline. So I encourage more people to self-publish. You really have nothing to lose and lots to gain. Let's become all things to all people so that by all possible means we might gain some. Thanks, Rob. That's neat.
Yeah, definitely great ideas there. And joining with your district to do that kind of thing, maybe your district mission board or whatever, does make a lot of sense. He also shared with us a blog article, which I think is interesting reading. And it is titled, 8 Trends Where Churches Are Moving Virtual. I was just listening to someone talking about having a virtual assistant the other day and how it can free you up to do more creative things and let someone else handle other repetitive type tasks for you. And that's the number one thing they listed here, a growing trend in virtual assistants. They're highly trained and can typically do a 40-hour job in half the time at a much lower cost. And they actually talk about EA Help as being a website where you can do that. Virtual pastor and staff search process, I'm not sure would make use of that one. Virtual bookkeeping, virtual mobile app developers, virtual webmasters, virtual writers. So just kind of opening up your thinking toward those who are accessible to you and can perform some tasks for your congregation via the internet. Interesting stuff.
Very good. Thanks for sharing that as well, Rob.
And then finally, I wanted to make mention of our Wells Tech Google group, which has been a real happening place
lately. Yeah.
Yeah. My inbox is full of all kinds of great wisdom. It started off a couple of weeks ago with a question from Pastor Emil Burgess, where he was looking for digital display recommendations. Got some great feedback from Joshua Shanek at Kettle Moraine and from others. And then we've moved on to some equipment that's available from, I believe, Salem Lutheran and also from Emmanuel in New London. If you're interested in new servers or computer lab setup, I say new, it would be obviously used equipment that they've made available, and it sounds like for affordable pricing. Then there was a very lengthy discussion about interactive whiteboards and kind of pros and cons, a little bit of feedback from folks about research they've done. James Monkey chimed in, as did Shelley, and her last name escapes me.
Karstens?
Yes, Shelley Karstens, about what they're using in her school district. And then a few words from Jason Schmidt about their decisions out in the Bennington ISD where he works. And then finally, Cindy Krieger shared links to a technology security conference that you can follow online. And so all of this great content is available, and you can get it in your email inbox and enjoy it online as well if you sign up for the Wells Tech group. And it's pretty simple to do. We'll have a link in the show notes, and you'll just need a Google account to get signed up. And once you do, then the emails will start being delivered. So a great group of people to tap into and always willing to share their expertise as questions come up.
Yep. Wellstech.wells.net is our show notes page, and you got links there at the top. Mm-hmm. So be a part of that. So we look forward to more community feedback. We're going to kick off a new season, and we started this trend last year where we had one show a month dedicated just to community feedback. So get your stuff in there, and we'll talk through that. And we know that you have a lot of things to share, so don't be shy. Mm-hmm. Next week, I'm also looking forward to a conversation with somebody we kind of got to know through her photographs over the past year. Naomi Green contributed to our Wells Tech Photo Challenge more so than anybody else, but really high quality. We felt, let's devote a show just to photography. It's probably a good thing, a good skill set that everybody wishes they could do better, but also something that every church and school probably could take advantage of as well. And we're going to have Naomi on talking a little bit about what she does and maybe some tips for us amateur photographers as well. So that'll kick off our new season. Again, we're going to roll out our educational technology focus shows, a change in one of our hosts this year. So a little tease for that. I think you'll be excited about that. And lots of good stuff coming up this year. A lot of things I'm personally excited about, some technologies, hopefully that will make a difference in your ministry. So don't hesitate to spread the word that this show exists, and it's a lot of fun. Right, Sally?
It is, and looking forward to officially getting back in the saddle and all the exciting things we share on the weekly show just starting next week.
Thank you, everybody, for joining us. We're so happy that you decided to give us a little bit of your time, and we look forward to meeting you again next week. God's blessings. Bye-bye.